It's Helping Hand, weekly feature, HPR 1 stations, every Friday, and then online at hawaiipublicradio.org, where we archive all of our Helping Hand segments so you can hear all the interviews that we've ever done. Each week, Helping Hand puts a spotlight on an organization, topic, or event that offers assistance to the disabled and others among the most vulnerable. Aloha, I'm Dave Lawrence. Thank you very much for joining us. This week, we are learning about ALS, amyotrophic lateral sclerosis, also known as Lou Gehrig's disease. And we're learning about ALS research as well. And this is ahead of the upcoming Hawaii Walk to Defeat ALS, September 17th. And during this month that they are seeking support, we're welcoming back our returning guest, a privilege to have him here in the studio with us again. It's Fred Fisher, President and CEO, ALS Association, Golden West Chapter. Aloha, Fred. Welcome back, brother.
Aloha, Dave. It's great to be back.
It's great to have you back. And amyotrophic lateral sclerosis, correct me on my pronunciation.
Getting really good at it. That's it.
That's it? All right.
That's it.
It's a heavy thing. And before we get into some recent discoveries and successes, some positive news, ice bucket challenge money, in fact, involved in helping to make it happen, from my understanding. Because there's just so many things on this planet that are deeply upsetting and troubling. One of them is ALS, and not everybody knows all the particulars and ins and outs. And it's, as I said, it's a privilege to have you here because you can fill in those blanks, and they are very important to learn about. Can you talk about how ALS affects folks and perhaps give us some of the very first signs that a person might experience, symptoms, clues for those who could end up getting ALS?
So one of the big challenges with ALS is that it mimics other diseases early on. And so it's really hard to diagnose. We're getting closer to having a biomarker where we can actually test blood and say, oh, it's ALS. It's not a stroke. It's not Parkinson's. It's not Alzheimer's. It's ALS. But for now, we're not there yet. And so the first signs a person might experience are slurred speech, difficulty swallowing, difficulty breathing. They may not be able to grasp the pen or their toothbrush. They may have a dropped foot. They may trip and wonder, how did that happen? What's going on? And then it progresses. So it can start anywhere in the body. It affects nearly every muscle except for the heart. So any muscle can be affected first, typically either what's called your upper motor neurons or your lower motor neurons, and it progresses from there. It's a challenging disease. It's a brain disorder that actually disconnects the nerves from the muscle. And so when that happens, the muscle withers and dies, and you lose the ability to walk, to talk, to swallow, and eventually to breathe. And so people living with ALS need lots of support, lots of coordinated care. And that's what the ALS Association is here to do in Hawaii.
What age does this kind of thing start to occur in people?
For most people, it's 50 to 70, 40 to 70. But for the guys that created the idea for the Ice Bucket Challenge, they were in their mid-20s.
And they have
ALS. And so it can strike really any of us at any time. If you're over 40, you have about a 1 in 400 lifetime risk of being diagnosed with ALS. What's particularly challenging about Hawaii is that most of the population in Hawaii is over 50. So Hawaii has a particular risk for ALS just because of the age factor. And then it gets compounded by the fact that Hawaii has lots of veterans, and veterans get ALS twice as often as everyone else.
I remember that from many of these details, but that one in particular stuck out when we were talking last time, because it's, when we say veterans, that can involve service in a lot of different places. It doesn't always mean combat. It could really be anywhere in the U.S. You might have just done your service and then not be involved in the military anymore. It could have been overseas. Since we last talked, as I recall, there wasn't really a key connection between why that's happening. Is there something, about the supplies that are vended to the military that would bring all these people together? Is there any more we can add to how the vets end up with that? Or is it there a certain unique stress that comes with that participation in serving for the armed forces?
So those are all the right questions. And it's the reason we passed the ALS Registry Act, because we wanted to understand from an epidemiological point of view, what are the things that people are being exposed to? Where do they work? Where do they live? What's their lifestyle choice? To see if any of that contributes to ALS. And so we've been here in Hawaii promoting the ALS Registry. We want every single living person with ALS to participate. It's an extensive survey that covers a person's entire life that is going into a gigantic database. It's being run by the CDC. So this isn't an ALS Association database. This is the CDC is trying to find this. And certainly the challenge and the mystery of why veterans are getting it and the consequence of that is why we're able to get funding from Congress to drive this registry so that we can begin to answer all of those questions. But for now, we just don't know.
To get that registry data, does that include getting a genetic sample of their tissue for each of these people?
So this will be the first year, actually, that the registry program includes taking samples from people, blood, skin. The CDC is actually ramping up to send people to ALS patients' homes, including here in Hawaii, to collect those samples so that now as researchers are able to use human biological material to study ALS, it will power the registry in a completely new way so that not only will they have access to the data, but they'll also have access to biological samples, which then can be used. With those samples, we can create human ALS in a dish and study it. And so if we see, for example, that, well, people exposed to sunshine are at higher risk of ALS than everyone else, and then we look at their biomaterial and create their ALS, we can see what's different about that subset of people who get ALS more often than other people.
Are there any substances, drugs, lifestyle choices like heavy exercise or sleeping more, things like that, that can slow down the progression of this disease?
So that's another question that the registry is designed to answer. Do we see that people who exercise more get ALS more often or less often than other people do? Do super athletes get it more or less often than people with ALS? So for now, all of what we have is kind of anecdotal, you know, observations, which never stand up to scientific scrutiny.
So far, the answer would really be there is not any drug or something or choice of behavior that people can do that they know will slow this down once they've got it.
Not really. It's coming out that keeping muscles activated, keeping muscles oxygenated. So when somebody's got it, then we have a lot of things we need people to do that definitely slow it down. So there's nothing you and I can do right now that we know of to prevent us from getting ALS,
even though
we're at risk. But once you have ALS, that's really the core of what we're trying to do here in Hawaii, is create the awareness of what we need people to do. And that includes two key things. So we need oxygen and we need nutrition. And when swallowing gets affected, how do people keep their calories up? How do people eat? And when people's breathing is affected, how do we keep them breathing? And so it's those two choices that have to be made early on and intervened early on so that we keep nutrition up, so you keep muscle mass up. We keep oxygen up, so we keep energy up. So those are key things. And the other issue is this coordinated care system that we've now put in place thanks to people's support of the Walk to Defeat ALS. We've now incubated a clinic here on Hawaii that specializes in ALS, and with a full multidisciplinary team that has been trained to coordinate their care with other disciplines, because it takes 9 different doctors to treat ALS. So now we've got all those 9 disciplines
in
one place at one time, dealing with a whole group of ALS patients so that their care is being coordinated with someone who's out in the community, visiting them in their home, connecting them to resources in their home. So we have staff here in Hawaii who are working with ALS patients on every island, making sure they're getting connected to the things they need. So when someone's having trouble walking, well, we don't want to wait until they have a bad fall and hurt themselves before they get help with their walking. So we get them the help early so that we're preventing injury, we're preventing ER visits, we're preventing starvation, we're preventing oxygen deprivation. All those things help people live longer and better with ALS.
And I know that Taryn Davis, regional care manager of the chapter here in Hawaii, Kahala Hauser, regional director of community outreach here, this is all part of this new clinic that we've got here, right?
That's right. They're terrific. They're local people here. They understand the state, they understand the culture, they understand the people, and they understand the resources. And they're working directly with the medical professionals who are committed to helping people with ALS.
And to get this to, so the clinic is in Honolulu, and folks are, how many folks in Hawaii, first of all, have ALS that we know of?
Well, that's another tricky question. We think there are probably around 100 or so living at any given time. But we know that things get in the way from people reaching out for help.
Right.
But we want to make sure that everybody knows about us so they can make that choice for themselves. Right now, Taryn has about 55 people, 55 families that she's supporting today. And that number will change today because new people will get diagnosed and unfortunately someone will die. And so it's a, but for now, one person is handling the needs of 55 families throughout the state.
Right. And it's, even if the number is, you know, there's two sides, you can say, well, thank gosh, it's not a larger number, but at the same time, they're individuals and they're going through something that is, you know, you put yourself in their shoes.
Well, here's the thing about that is that research is progressing. We've got new clinicals starting either later this year or in early 2017. We have a clinical trial that's going on right now for a drug that's designed to slow down ALS. Once we have a way to meaningfully slow ALS, the ALS population is going to mushroom because people will be living longer with it. Mm. It's unlikely early on we're going to change the rate at which people are being diagnosed, but we are going to change the rate at which they're dying.
How long does, that's a great, I was one of my, so from the time you're diagnosed till the time generally that you pass on as a result of this, what's the time frame of something like that?
So what we used to say is 2 to 5 years. But everywhere we establish this robust multidisciplinary community and clinic-based model of care, we find people start living longer and better. Right. So that the ALS population in Hawaii, yes, it sounds small. When you think that, well, more than 50% of Hawaii's population is over 40, then we have a high risk for people, 1 in 400. And so the potential for people with ALS is very high. And we're really glad more people aren't getting it. But as we're helping people live longer, there will be more people living here who have it.
The cats that came up with the ingenious, and then they must have felt so much reward that the ice bucket challenge took off. But the sobering reality, I don't know how much reward you, I mean, to, you know, just it reminds you how much you're blessed to not have something. It's overwhelming to think about. Those cats, were they military vets or to
no.
explain their youthful contraction of this?
Nope, they weren't. And they, like you, found purpose in this world and in their life. And so while the revenue from the Ice Bucket Challenge and the investments we're making in over 150 research projects around the world and the new treatments that are coming online, they may not help any of those three guys. But they know that they're making a huge difference in the world and they're leaving their mark, which is kind of what any of us can really hope for.
That's about all you can hope for. And this very mysterious journey, why you're here, how long you're here, what you did before, and where you're going to go next. And
none of them were thinking about launching the world's largest social media fundraising phenomenon ever in the history of the world.
And that's a great lead-in to, since we had you last, that, that dough has been getting put to work, and you'll correct me if I'm wrong about my perception of this, but there's been a discovery of a gene known to be among the most common genetic contributors to ALS, and my understanding is it came from funds raised through the Ice Bucket Challenge.
Absolutely. So when people wonder sort of where'd that money go and is it getting put to good use, we've actually identified three new genes, the latest just a few months ago, which is the fifth leading cause of ALS that we know of. And now means that for, so the other thing we haven't talked about is that ALS runs in families, and it, or it happens sporadically. Most of the time it's sporadic. But for familial ALS, we didn't know why those people were getting it either. We, it wasn't that long ago that we only knew of one gene that caused ALS. Now we know of 30 different gene mutations that cause this disease, and we just discovered the fifth leading cause of familial ALS. And the other thing we didn't know before until now is that these genes, which we assumed only occurred in people where it was running in their families, we're now finding it in people with sporadic ALS, the kind of ALS that 90% of the people get. It, they don't know why they got it. They don't know of anybody who ever had it. And now suddenly they have it. Well, by now we're finding they also have these same genes. So we now think we know of about 75% of what causes familial ALS, and 12% now of what causes sporadic ALS. And when we know what causes it, then we have a target. So now we have 30 therapeutic targets. Thinking of ALS now as one disease, kind of like cancer is thought of as one disease. But the reality is there are different kinds of cancers. Right. Some of them are treatable, some of them are not. Some drugs work on some cancers. They don't work at all on other cancers, which is why diagnostics are so important. Well, it's probably going to be that ALS is the same thing.
That's a good educational sort of analogy that puts it in perspective, because you're right. Cancer is a big word and can mean so many different things.
So you have ALS, which tends to look the same. So these different causes, these different genes, they don't necessarily manifest themselves differently when you're looking at a person who has ALS. But the biological processes in play may be entirely different. So we have 30 different targets.
Genes
that we need to now develop medicines to cure. And
what does that do to the gene? That gets rid of it? That changes the gene? How does that, explain that in layman's terms, because this is some pretty heavy science we're getting into here.
Right. And neither of us are scientists.
Right.
So it's easy for me to put it in terms that I understand.
I get
anyway.
It.
What happens with genes, some genes make something happen and some genes stop something from happening. So for some genes, it's a loss of function that causes the disease process.
Okay.
For other genes, it's a gain of function. They start doing something they're not supposed to do, or they stop doing something they're supposed to do. So it's kind of tricky, because it's not just about identifying the gene, it's then understanding what does that gene do, and it's then understanding, well, what's the malfunction that we need to address. And we now have a treatment going into clinical trial to address the two most common forms of ALS genetically that we know of. And it's demonstrated the potential to literally eliminate the gene mutation. It's a DNA-based drug. That's about as much as I want to say about it, because from there it gets super complicated, but it essentially shuts off the gene and makes it look like it never existed.
I mean, that's why all this fundraising is so important, because you need some really heavily qualified folks and a lot of research to try to dissect this kind of thing. And it is this month a chance for folks to learn that when it comes to getting involved to support your organization during this month of August, every drop adds up. Explain.
Every drop. So the Ice Bucket Challenge raised $117 million. Most of that money were gifts of $10, $15, $25. So it's not that somebody needs to give $1 million, $1,000, $100. every drop counts. It all adds up. And what we really need is for people to be mobilized and understand that we're all at risk and that the research that we're funding is driving discovery for every neurodegenerative disease. So what we discover in ALS, the scientists believe, is likely applicable to Alzheimer's, Parkinson's, Huntington's. And so when you're supporting the work of the ALS Association and the science that we're activating, it's very likely that what we discover about ALS will inform therapies for these other diseases, which, by the way, Alzheimer's, Parkinson's, Huntington's, frontal temporal dementia, and ALS, taken together, they're the fifth leading cause of death in the country. None of them have an effective treatment or cure. Many, many, many more people with Alzheimer's disease, no cure. When people support our efforts, they can feel good that it's not just about ALS. It's about curing neurodegenerative disease, which will become the leading cause of death in the world because the populations are aging all over the place, particularly in the United States, which means the risk of neurodegenerative disease grows.
The walk, it's another component, and that's coming next month on September 17th in Honolulu, the Hawaii Walk to Defeat ALS. That's the only one you do in the state, right?
The only one in the state, and every dollar that's raised stays in the state. The ALS Association doesn't take any of that money outside of the state. It doesn't cover any administrative costs. It doesn't cover any fundraising costs. Every dollar goes back into taking care of people with ALS. And we're looking forward to announcing Hawaii's first ALS research program, which will look at how we can study the Asian Pacific Islander community living with ALS, because there's basically less known about that community than maybe the Eastern European, North American populations that now have it.
And you'll correct me if I'm wrong, but the cat that was last time I got the privilege of having you on is Dr. Justin Ichida.
Correct. A native son of Hawaii, family has lived here for generations. He's young, bright, motivated. His lab is at USC, but he's connected to people here at UH. And now that we have a clinic, now we have a way to conduct clinical trials and clinical research. And so all of that is being made possible, not by other people, not by people on the mainland. It's by people right here in Hawaii giving to make sure that this work happens, that people are taken care of, and that scientific discovery continues.
Yeah, well, as you pointed out, and it's a great way of reminding everybody about a number of causes, really, because there's a lot of tragedy in this in this world. And you say that, you know, if somebody, it's just $10 from this person, that person, it's like 1.3, pushing 1.4 million people in the state. So you can imagine if 1 million people in the state gave just $10 each.
Wow.
Where that, right.
Transformative.
And that's why I mention it in that way, because it's really, it's empowering to the everyday person, which is, like many of the things we talk about on Helping Hand, there are sometimes, you know, whatever pain it is that's drawing you to give doesn't go away when you start fighting for those in need or trying to defend those without a voice. But, you know, you just get a feeling, you know, you're contributing in a way that, as we talked about the mystery of life and what your journey here is, you know, that there, I don't know how to describe it else otherwise, but it's just a sense that you can get involved and you don't have to, as you say, a loan to do this. A small contribution from many people does add up to potentially make a big difference.
Well, and you don't, you know, sometimes you make a gift and you have no idea what happens to it. You don't know where it goes. When you make a gift to HPR, you can hear the programming. You see it happening. When you make a gift to something you're not particularly connected to, like ALS or whatever disease is your personal choice or motivating your giving, you're not always able to see the result of that gift. We've only been here for 3 years. Before that, there was no clinic. There were no staff. There was hardly any patients known. So now we're serving more than 200 families since we've been here. We've got a full multidisciplinary clinic in place. We've got full-time staff, visiting every island, visiting every patient. We've got support groups nearly on every island. We've got equipment loan pools. You can see the tangible results of your giving in real time, because it's not like we've been around forever,
right,
and you know, it just goes into some big pot somewhere. It's staying right here, and if you want to know what's happening with it, we're happy to show you, because it's making a huge difference.
And that's an important thing. Flip side is about giving. I had this guest on the other day, and it's just worth noting, because sometimes even when you give, I mean, that's great to have that immediate response that you can see. And in 3 years, the development is startling, and in a positive way that you've done. Jan Harada, she runs Helping Hands Hawaii, similarly named to this feature, but it's an organization been around a long time. And I'm just paraphrasing her story, but you know, her when her dad and mom were young, they didn't have a lot, and people helped them. A community center helped them. And her point was, you know, it's decades later, and here she is running this organization. And a lot of times the people who did that initial help of her parents may be long gone, but the residual ripples that it has sent, because now she's utilizing that sense of giving back in a broad way, homeless, kids who are getting beaten, all kinds of critical problems. So the act of giving can also, in addition to, there is that reward of being able to see the quick tangible results. It's also can cause ripples that go on very long time. And I think that her life is a huge example of that.
And one of our jobs, one of Taryn and Kahala's jobs here, is to connect people to the resources like Helping Hands and to hospice and to other organizations that are out there to serve people in need. So they're not unique to ALS, but people with ALS need the services of those other organizations.
Right.
And so we're not here to replicate what they're doing. We're here to connect people to what they're doing, because for now or not that long ago, they were isolated. They had no one to help them make that connection. So we also really depend on the rich fabric of caring and support, both in Hawaii's nonprofit organizations and just the people that live here who want to make a difference for people, that when they're supporting the work of these terrific organizations, they're actually supporting the work of many organizations,
right,
because our job is really to collaborate with one another and make sure we're leveraging the assets that each of us bring to this, because that's what people need.
Other things that are important for folks to know about the upcoming walk, or in terms of things that you need here for the clinic in Hawaii, ways that people listening, in addition to, so you want people to go out and do the walk, you want people to maybe form teams to do the walk, you want people to give this month, the floor is yours in terms of ways that you want to just empower people with ideas for specific tangible needs that you've got and trying to help you with that.
So everybody has the opportunity to make a difference. And what we want to do is know, what's your way to make a difference? How do you want to be involved? What do you want to bring to this effort? And so we want you to reach out to us. We want to have a conversation with you. And whether it's volunteering at the walk, walking at the walk, donating to the walk, forming a team for the walk, joining us on shows like this to tell your story and how it connects. We need awareness, we need engagement, and we need fundraising to pay for the end of this disease, because in the end, that's what it's going to come down to. So tell our story, join our effort, reach out on our website, give us a call, and talk to us about what you're interested in doing, because in the end, we're a way for people to live out that part of themselves that wants to make a difference in the world, that wants to make the world a better place. And we'd love to have them join us.
Corporate potential, too. I always like to remind folks that it's a great thing that if you have a company, or if you have a lot of coworkers that you're tight with, and you sometimes, all it takes is to listen to the news and you can hear about all the trouble that's going on. And there are a lot of ways you can do, as you pointed out, you can give back to help take a bite out of it. And there's a lot of corporate potential, right?
Mm-hmm.
For people who have a company, you can do a team effort at the walk. You can reach out and call. I'll give the contact info in a moment. You can attend this. You have a gala that's on the extended radar. It's going to happen in March of 2017.
We're setting the date now, but it's going to be a spectacular event. I can let people know it will be at the Royal Hawaiian, because they have been incredibly supportive of what we're trying to do here in Hawaii. When you talk about corporations who've been touched by ALS, The Royal Hawaiian, Starwood, Marriott, they're all part of that group of corporations that have lost people to ALS, that have big employee bases who are subject to ALS. We want people to know, stay tuned. It's going to be a terrific event at the Royal Hawaiian coming up this spring. And many corporations match donations from their employees. And so we want people to form a team, create challenges between one branch and another branch. Mm-hmm. Foodland has been a sponsor of our walk in the past, and their employees got terrifically involved. They did the Ice Bucket Challenge. They donated to us. And the ALS community is a very grateful community because they've tended to feel very isolated, like sure. No one cares. And so when the companies that they are patrons of, when the companies in their communities demonstrate that they're giving back to the ALS community, the ALS community is very loyal. And they can count on their support. So people forming corporate teams and corporate sponsorships are really essential to what we're doing.
ALS-Hawaii.org is the website where you can learn more, also reach out to them, and 866-750-2572. Dedicated line for information and for communicating over the phone. If you have questions, concerns, want to learn more about the clinic, want to learn ways that you can support the clinic, and again, the volunteering aspect is there for the walk on September 17th or in general as a way to roll up your sleeves and through hard work and being involved as a volunteer. Lend your support too, which is another way to, in addition to donating, get behind the effort that's going on, and in addition to spreading the word, which is really what the Ice Bucket Challenge in so many ways did. At HawaiiPublicRadio.org, all the contact information, the full interview, the radio feature, and all of our other helping hands that we've done over the last coming up on 3 years that we've been doing this feature. You can find them all archived at HawaiiPublicRadio.org. Anything we left out, Fred, that you want to get in there, by all means.
You've covered it. If people have questions, I'm always available to talk to anyone. They can call, they can reach me directly, they can drop me an email, and I'm happy to have a conversation, answer all their questions.
It's Fred Fisher. He's the president and CEO, ALS Association, Golden West Chapter, which is in force right here in the Aloha State. It's a horrible way that we get together because it's such a touching and dramatic thing. But I'm grateful that you're there and all the information that you so eloquently share with us, and on behalf of those people that we're helping out and trying to help out. Thanks for doing it, Fred. Thank you so much for being on Helping Hand again.
Thanks for making our progress possible.